Right, yeah, yeah.
And then Luke Sant and yep. Mimi are close friends.
Yep. All the Bard group. Yeah, Peggy is great. I love her. So is Luke, but yeah, yes. I know Peggy a little better.
How are you doing this there?
We're not yet because we haven't even started programming. We just got our license, so we're just in the literally building the station phase. So part of the reason to be here, of course, is to try to talk about how we can coordinate local issues. And that's not because the news. Well, we have to determine what the focus will be. But we, you know, at Bard, there's more of an interest in being idiosyncratic in terms of programming, but also because it's an academic environment to do series, in-depth series on things that wouldn't be quite as, you know, daily kind of news-like. It would be more investigative series on a range of topics, so we need to figure out exactly if we are going to do news proper, then we need to figure out exactly how we're going to do that, because the idea is that we won't be devoting a large portion of our resources to that kind of programming, right away at least, because that's not the strength of the college. And because we're not using students for this particular station, because they have their own student-run station, you know, there will be less kind of cheap labor on hand, I think, to try to pull off something like that. So, I mean, that's the starting point. But of course, being here, this is part of a larger discussion that will hopefully help us to figure out exactly how we can get local news or contribute to a program on local news, but not necessarily have to produce it ourselves. So
you should check out, I don't know if you've looked at the NEH summer stipends. The deadline is, I think it's January.
For the following summer. Yeah.
It's for the following summer, and NEH, well, we were looking at a grant. The deadline was August 22nd. It's a little, we're not quite at that stage yet,
right,
but
right.
They have big humanities grants that are often our media projects partnered with universities,
right.
Colleges. So the NEH summer stipend pays for an academic, a scholar to do a summer research project that's then going to contribute to some sort of media
mm-hmm.
project. So that might be something, thinking about doing different in-depth series,
yeah.
investigative series on scholarly topics. You might look into that soon because
yeah,
it is January.
Great.
I think it's like a $3,600 grant that just pays for the research.
Right.
Tons, great.
What would be
yes.
the broadcast area?
It's Red Hook, Tivoli, Germantown, a little south of Red Hook, and then Saugerties, and hopefully part of Kingston, and we get to Pine Plains and Elizabeth in an oddly shaped blob, but that's roughly the configuration. Yeah, actually, I worked with my colleague at Bard at the Human Rights Project helped to get...
I'm Bill Schmeck. I didn't meet you.
Oh.
I'm Bill Schmeck.
At
Swarthmore.
What happened to your last name?
So,
S-M-A-R-T.
That was a kind of different configuration.
Yeah.
I've had it spelled my entire life.
For the journalist to spend a year with the students to actually produce
I do an education blog.
So the idea is that we're going to try and create one of those at Bard too and have a resident journalist.
I'm a former,
I'm
a print person.
To help the students.
Yeah, I'm a print person. I've never done radio, never.
To produce interesting radio, but also to be on hand.
And Paul, what's your background?
Edit and write for a number of local publications. I'm based in Greene County, but edit a couple papers up on Route 28 corridor in Ulster County and write for Ulster Publishing and have edited for them. Used to edit a paper called The Mountain Eagle when it was a regional publication for about 5 years.
And maybe we should go around and do the brief introductions. Erin, you want to go next, Al?
I'm Erin Roberts. I've been working with Tom and Galen, WJFC, this summer as an intern. I'm in graduate school at University of Oregon. And I spent about the last 10 years in public radio, both college and community radio, at stations in Colorado.
Hi, I'm Danielle Ryu. I work at Bard, and I'm starting the new Bard full power FM station. So,
how do you spell your last?
R-I-O-U.
I'm Lynn Sloniker. Right now, I'm doing an education blog, Unmuffled, but I've written for local outlets. I work for both local papers. I've been writing for about 20 years overall.
I'm Bill Schmidt. I'm a columnist, investment columnist for a number of newspapers in Columbia County and in Berkshire County, Massachusetts. I also am on the radio in Pittsfield and very shortly in Vox, the five stations that cover the Berkshire County. And all of that is my hobby. My day job, I'm a money manager for Berkshire Money Management in Pittsfield. So.
You said you are on the radio?
Yeah.
What?
I'm at WBRK. I do a 10-15 minute market wrap on the stock market each day. I'll do the same thing for Vox. Plus, I'm doing a half hour weekly talk show on deciding which way to go, either on local business issues or global market issues. So that starts mid-September. And then, of course, that dovetails with what I do. I write two columns a week for various publications on those same subjects.
My name is Kelly Benjamin, and I'm a based out of Florida. I've been involved in community radio in Florida for a number of years, and I'm an old friend of Tom's, and I came up here kind of to see the in utero community radio station efforts going on, and I've also been a correspondent for local in Florida and for this community radio station. I've been involved in radio for a number of years, considering more of this way.
And I'm Tom Rowe from WGXC, and I have a journalism background, too. I've mostly written about music, but I've also written about other things. I freelanced for the New York Times for a while in the mid-90s, had a music column in the New York Post, and then fact-checked for a gourmet magazine and copy-edited for Manhattan File and a bunch of others, so I've done many different journalism jobs over the years. You want to?
Sure. My name is Terry Teasdale, and I'm publisher of the Columbia paper, which is a weekly paper for Columbia County.
And a brilliant journalist. And entrepreneur.
What's the name of that publication?
It's called the Columbia Paper.
The Columbia Paper, okay.
He edited the Independent until that closed in September?
No, it was February 6th. The date sticks in.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Sad day for Columbia County.
And I guess mainly we're here because Erin happens to be in town, and Erin was part of a station in Colorado, KPUT, that...
you're allowed to make K-butt jokes.
So. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, it's K-butt. Should I say it ever?
And they had an agreement worked out between the local community newspapers. Oh, yeah, sure. You're Andrew?
Yes.
All right, I'm Tom.
It's me.
We just all went around and introduced ourselves, so maybe you can quickly say who you are.
I'm Andrew Edwards, the Register Star.
I was going to say, too, I guess since we're in a room full of journalists that basically everything is on the record, and we're also web streaming, too, but if you want to say something off the record, you can say it off the record if everyone will agree, I guess, and we'll pause the microphones for a moment, but hard to keep secrets in a room full of journalists, so I think everything's on the record. So I think I can explain a little more about the WGXC project in a minute. Maybe you want to explain how first what the your system out in Colorado was.
So KPUT was a station that I worked at in Crested Butte, Colorado, and, which is a rural mountain town. We on a good day we reached through the airwaves about 5,600. It was really small community, and a station the size of ours had a hard time keeping a resident journalist on staff just because our news budget wasn't very big. So to keep a high quality journalist on staff was really hard for us. So we were brainstorming different ideas of how we can utilize the talent that already existed in the valley. And KBUT reached two main towns, Crested Butte and Gunnison. There was a weekly newspaper in both towns. And we struck up a partnership with them where we would pay the journalists from both newspapers a piece rate to rework the stories that they're publishing in the paper for the air. So we trained them. We brought in someone to train them on how the differences between print and audio audio news. We taught them. We set them up with recorders. Taught them how to recording techniques, how to get their audio into the computer, how to edit, and you know, and paid a piece rate for each news story. Yeah, I mean that's about it. The reporters would deliver the stories usually on Thursday or Friday after their weeklies came out on Thursday. They'd spend the weekend. I'd have all the stories. We had one person at the station that was coordinating who was doing what story at the radio station. It seemed to be was a really great partnership. I think the reporters gained a lot of really valuable skills that they could take back to the newspaper. A lot of publicity. Everybody cross-promoted. As far as breaking news stories, we usually aired the news stories after the papers came out. And if something happened that was breaking news that the news reporters wanted to put on air, the audio news served as a teaser to the upcoming week's story that was going to be in the paper. So just the nature of audio and print news, I think that they really serve to complement each other. I think you can read a story, but you can't hear the actual voice on air. You can hear a story on air, but you can't get the specifics that a newspaper article is going to give you, the numbers, the charts, the visuals. So it ended up being a really good partnership, and yeah, both newspapers are still on board. I have contacts down here, which we can get to later on if anybody would like to talk to any of the newspapers. They all agreed they're happy to be in contact with anybody that's just wants to know how it works from a newspaper side.
Would the same story then, once it was delivered, would it repeat itself over the week until the new ones came in?
We had enough stories that we'd run one local story in the morning magazine and repeated again in the evening magazine, news magazine. Yeah. So, and then it was on the computer, archived the day it went on air, and it stays on the computer for a very long length of time. So one specific story a day, 7 days a week.
And then what did you have roundups of, in terms of putting that news story into a context?
Well, we were an NPR affiliate, so how it was placed was after the morning news and the evening news, it would immediately go into local news. So it was at a time in the day when people were already listening to the news, going into some music, drive times, basically. Does anyone else have a question about how it worked?
Were the newspapers skeptical at first of this relationship?
The newspapers were really skeptical. I think that the journalists were more excited than the publishers right at the get-go. Well, we had one publisher that was really excited and one that was a little more skeptical about just competition and how it was going to work, organization. I mean, I think they were worried that the journalists were so taxed already. Just, you know, they were kind of understaffed, that it would take away from their work at the newspaper. But
but they probably also were interested in getting the journalists more money without having to pay them themselves.
Exactly. They wanted to keep the good journalists they had and didn't feel like... And you know, they weren't really able to offer a lot of educational opportunities to the journal, professional development sort of thing. So this I think they foresaw as some free professional development for the journalists. I do think that media is becoming a multi-platform experience now.
Well, on that thought, what was the web relationship? I mean, how did you relate? Was it links, or did you actually put up not only streaming, but some sort of podcasts of these local news broadcasts that the newspapers also put on their sites?
The newspapers we both had a banner right on the homepage, Crested Butte News and Gunnison Country Times,
mm-hmm.
links to their papers. The journalists always started out by saying, "This is Will Shoemaker from Gunnison Country Times."
So they all delivered their own copy.
Their own copy, yeah.
But you didn't package that as a podcast, or do the papers package that as a podcast?
The papers did not. It was exclusive to KBUT's. The audio news was on KBUT's website as a podcast.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And did they link to those podcasts?
I believe so.
Yeah.
You know, it's been a while since I've...
And I think we would...
So.
Our policy so far is with things is that things would be on both websites. We did this, I mean, we don't know how it would actually turn out, but if we did something like this, we would probably let the newspapers put the audio on their site as well as the radio station having the audio. Cause we just want more people to have access to the news, and I think it's a community service, and if it's on both websites, then more people have access to it. And both the newspaper and the radio station are both getting something out of it, too.
Mm-hmm. It might be a good time to talk about just different models that you're thinking of having on WGFC,
yeah.
Because this is one really specific model that I think aspects could be used of for WGFC. I don't necessarily... the community is so different and structured so different. There's a lot of different towns and different newspapers and bloggers and a lot of different kinds of talent that I think aspects of this would work really well.
You had two newspapers that were competing a little bit, but not too much because they were both at the other ends of the valley?
Yes. There was some cross-coverage of stories, but they were both independent newspapers, and it was the only two newspapers.
All right. How did you pay for it? And was it profitable? I mean, how did you pay for the journalist and coffee and everything else?
Yeah, we had a news budget. And like I said before, it was small. It was a small news budget, so it really couldn't... The advantage of paying journalists a piece rate is that they were already going out and getting paid to do the investigative story from the newspaper. We were paying them extra on top of that to rework the story and record it. So how it started out was we would pay $20 per story, just the rip and read, if they wanted to... And, you know, we set them up with recording stations and FTP sites so they could send over the audio stories. When they started sending rip and read plus some actual sound, some actualities, we paid them $30. We paid $40 a story for an edited complete piece that we could just put on the air. So it was motivation for the journalists to improve their skills.
Well, where did you get your budget?
You were saying you eliminated you were paying an independent journalist before,
yes,
yeah. and you were having trouble
getting
a good quality person.
Right, I think our news budget was around $40,000.
And how did you get that money? Did you
through
advertising?
No, we were a community station, so there's no advertising.
Okay.
Through pledge drives, through grants,
okay.
Through
underwriting.
Underwriting.
So was this part of the radio station's budget?
This was just a built-in part of the radio station's budget. It was part of the radio station's mission statement to deliver timely news to the locally relevant news. So it was something that we had to have on the radio station. It was budgeted in, the board of directors allocates.
And who determined what stories would go up? Was there ever a surplus of stories, or was it always just hoping you had enough to fill?
No, we had one person at the station, it was me, who was in charge of communicating with all the journalists, And what I had the journalists do, we had Crested Butte delivered 3 stories a week, Gunnison delivered 4 stories a week. They had a little bit bigger of a staff.
And did you determine which stories those would be, or did they tell you what the stories were?
They usually told us. They had editorial meetings at both of their ends. Wednesday night, they would send me their ideas, and Thursday, I would write them back just to make sure there wasn't any crossover north end of the valley, south end. We delineated some topic areas kind of right from the start. There's a ski resort there, so any ski resort news, Crested Butte got, you know, BLM news, Bureau of Land Management news, Gunnison got. So we had to set some guidelines. There was maybe 3 times that I worked that we had crossover of stories, but it was as simple as someone's already covering that, or, you know, there was no conflict between reporters.
Here, there definitely would there's so many more news outlets, there definitely would be more...
Yeah.
Potential.
Yeah. and I'm fairly even interested in, I don't know if we could do this, but perhaps running both of the... If there people are running 2 different stories about the same topic, maybe we want to run both, just because it's going to have 2 different points of view and 2 different... you know, you might not have to run them like back to back, but we could run one at the 4 o'clock hour and the other one at the 5 o'clock hour.
Well, yeah. Your news magazine is going to be, you're not going to have NPR.
We're not, right.
So
we're going to be a little different than Hearst in the station you're talking about is, WAMC obviously is the NPR station up here. So we're not going to be running those programs. We're going to have a wide open, morning show basically from 6 to 9 or 6 to 10, and an afternoon show basically 3 to 4 to 7 probably, that is filled with these sort of reports if we work out some deal like that, or we've also talked about perhaps calling some local journalists if, you know, the day your story comes, the big story about, you know, the DSS move here in Hudson, or, you know, whatever the... You know, some factory closing, or all the different publications break different stories all the time. And every day, the radio station is going to be talking, people on the radio station are going to be talking about whatever the big stories are. So, one possibility is just having, doing interviews with the reporter who has a story, and that way the publication will get some publicity, and people who are interested in the story from hearing the discussion about it may. Go to the newspaper or the blog's website. They may go out and buy the paper, or so that's one possible model. I think there.
That's probably the simplest.
Certainly,
it would have to be organized. A certain time of the day, we'll be doing news. Would you be available for a call in between 9 and 10 to discuss?
How does it work? Where the because most people when they go in on a radio station are going to want to hear a mix of national and other sorts of things and. Where you read the headlines, and I know they do this on television at times, and you know, there are blogs that work this way, where they're going to go over what the different headlines are. And do you know any other formats for doing this in radio? Where
I know that WTIP, a small station in Grand Marais, Minnesota, they have a format like that, where they have a morning DJ that starts at 7 in the morning. They read, and that's after the BBC news. They read through a list of AP headlines,
mm-hmm.
national, international, and national headlines, and then launch into the global news.
But you could also do that where you're reading from different newspapers, and what different? I mean,
well,
different.
The problem with reading from newspapers is you don't write written. News is not like audio news. It
mm-hmm.
contains different kinds of information. It's
I'm not saying reading the story, but reading what the headlines are, or reading some sort of what I guess C-SPAN does that, where they go through and...
A lot of morning shows do that sort of thing, reading the morning headlines and kind of discussing. And I think that's what our station will end up being. We'll probably have 2 or 3 hosts on these morning and afternoon magazine shows, and so there'll be some banter back and forth about the stories of the day, and we're going to focus as much as possible on the Columbia and Greene County stories of the day, but I'm sure that there will be also some talk, like you're suggesting, about the
whatever the healthcare debate is today, or, you know.
At the radio thing that you were doing at AMC, that started off as a means of kind of getting to local news?
Yeah, it started a long time ago. I was still at Woodstock Times. But, they wanted a way to connect with local, with communities that they reach out to, or they reach.
Oh, I just wanted to introduce Sam Prep.
Yes. Do you have the papers? Can we give Sam a copy of the...
You've worked a little bit in news yourself.
I work both sides of the fence, news and reporting and being interviewed. So, yeah, a little bit.
So, besides being just being interviewed, some of the other ways that WGXC could work with local journalists or publications is anybody could propose a show. So there may be an idea to do some sort of roundtable show of journalists, or if someone's particular publication or blog wants to do a weekly or a monthly show, you can certainly apply for that and. You know, basically do your own news show about your area of expertise, or we'll have to discuss with our council whether we want like independent publications to have their own audio show. I'm not sure we'd be comfortable with that, but it's certainly a possibility for say the Columbia Paper show to be on, or the Register Star show to be in the mix. I wouldn't rule that out. I don't know if I would rule it in. What are the other?
There could be free recorded shows that air over the months. If you wanted to keep doing something about the school news, what's happening in the schools, you could produce a weekly, even 5-minute magazine that airs at a certain time during the week. If you think about, like an Earth and Sky broadcast, it happens for 2 minutes a day. If you have a gardening tip of the day, even small, something from an economic standpoint, investments.
That's what I was thinking, to do a half an hour show once a week with, it would alternate between people in this target area, Columbia and Greene County. Whether it wouldn't matter whether it's a national issue or a local issue, okay, because you're still getting the local color, okay? Whether you're talking about the impact of the stock market or the impact of tourism, it doesn't matter. And then you just bring in guest speakers, okay? Do either half an hour show weekly. That's exactly what I do with the column. So basically, that's what I was thinking is, I write a column anyway and just basically take the people that I'm interviewing and the subject matter and flip it onto the radio. Okay. So, whatever the last column's credit card debt, okay, for example, but I interviewed the bank manager at Kinderhook Bank and a couple of other banks on that, one on the growing cost of man's best friend. Then I interviewed the vet at Cake and Dogs of Hudson and the Humane Society. Okay, so that kind of format could be a national or a local issue, but you're bringing in local people.
Yeah. Yeah.
You could have that either as a call-in or not.
And the same thing with Lynn writes this great blog called Unmuffled about the education system in Hudson, and I thought it would be great if you wanted to come on like the day after the Board of Education meetings and give a report about what happened last night. And it could be like some thing that you pre-produce yourself with audio, so you pre-record it, or it could just be a informal conversation on the phone with whoever is the host of the show.
Mm-hmm.
We can find like a format that you're comfortable with and that works, for you or whoever else.
Right. Yeah, sounds good.
Danielle, do you want to talk a little bit about what Bard College's news, what are the possibilities with news are going to be?
Well, like I was saying earlier, because BARD is an academic institution, the real strength of BARD is not going to be doing breaking news. It's going to be other kinds of programming. So the idea of being able to say, carry whatever your news show will be on our station would be great. And then if that meant that we could maybe contribute in some way to stuff going on in Dutchess County, to your news program that we would then carry at the same time, that seems to be a model that might work, at least initially, because the priority for our station isn't going to focus so much on that as it will on in-depth series of things and certain other kinds of culture politics programs that won't be of a timely daily nature, but more kind of investigations. At least initially, that's in the first year, so that's where we're going to try and put all of our efforts. And then, you know, obviously some kind of reciprocal, you know, sharing. I mean, if we have programs on, I mean, one, for instance, that we're pitching that we're hoping to get a lot of money for is doing a Latino-Latina program that will be bilingual radio, Spanish-English. A two-hour in-depth program, I think probably once per week, we need to figure out the details, but that would be something that, of course, there's a big interest in that in this area because it's a completely underserved and completely ignored demographic. But that would be something that, if you guys gave us the daily news, that would be a show we could give to you, you could broadcast if you wanted. But I see in some ways, you know, we're not going to have a dedicated breaking news kind of format right away. We may eventually, but I think it would be much more beneficial for both of us, given what our different mandates are, to pair up. And obviously, the more we can kind of align that programming to be on the air at the same time as your station, the better, I think, for the coverage and the publicity and awareness and everything else. So.
Yeah, I mean, I really think that given just the nature of newspaper, radio, and television now, I've noticed a lot of different media coalitions starting up that there is there's a lot of sharing of information, sharing of resources mostly, in order to get the information out in whatever particular venue you are giving it at. But especially with radio, there's a lot of different coalitions in local areas to share. Share news that's relevant to similar size communities. It's the only way.
One element along that line that we were hoping was going to come out of these meetings would be to help push a coalition of media sources to get actual Meet the Candidates events going. I don't know how they, if they're active in Columbia County, but in Greene County there haven't been any Meet the Candidate events.
Not yet.
For years.
Oh, and for years. That's different.
I don't think ever in a lot of places.
Do they have candidates in Greene County?
That's what I was going to ask.
Yeah, there actually are some races at this point, but you know, there was a League of Women's Voters, and they set up candidate events and debates, and nobody showed up. None of the candidates did.
The last one they did was for the DA's race in the last year, 2 years ago. That was the only one I've ever come across.
But that, I mean, would you know? I think it would be of interest. I mean, we could pull in the League of Women Voters from, I guess, Mid-Hudson Valley, which is based in Ulster County now. Is there a league in Columbia County? We're bringing them across from Columbia County.
Yeah, as everyone's publication or personal blog interested in, the idea is basically trying to get every publication and blog in the area to kind of co-sponsor together somehow to make these debates or candidate forums happen. Is that something that I guess the radio station would do, WGXC at least, would web stream live or put it on the FM once the FM was going, the debate, and record it so that any reporter for your publication or yourself could write a story from your house about the debate, or the next, if you can't be there, you know, the next day you could listen to the recording and write a wrap up and quote the candidates. Is that something people are interested in, or is that useful?
I can't speak for my publication, but personally, yeah, I think it's a great idea. It seems to be a dearth of interaction between candidates and the public. That kind of form.
And it also, is there, in Columbia, is there much public access at this point?
Oh, cable?
Cable?
I think it's probably the western side where there's Mid-Hudson cable does some, but you get out of that orbit, it's not much.
And is
because this is something that the radio, even right now, can do by streaming and archiving meetings. And I'm finding in Ulster that a lot of people are. It means that they can cover more meetings by covering what's on public access, the things that are recorded. So it doesn't mean that one has to actually be sitting in every meeting room, although you miss
every reporter's dream.
Yeah. But
we're doing that a little bit now. Like the Carrow Town meeting last night is on our website, that someone could write a story based on the recording, you know.
And you can you record? Can you? You can also record by people taking a cell phone and opening it up, right? And,
we can take calls back at the studio, and people could, record the meeting or send the meeting through a phone call now to the radio station, and so we could stream it there or put it on the FM there through a phone call, and then the cell phones now, the iPhone has a recorder, so. It's just much easier to make recordings of town meetings or lectures or something than it was a few years ago. So that's one thing that the WGXC is very interested in. Is we're trying to locate the people who go to every one of the town meetings in all these different towns, that go every single time and that are like really passionate about it. And if they have a cell phone, seeing if they will stream it to us or record it and then put it up to share with everyone, so that all these local towns have some sunshine on their what's going on, and so that local journalists could cover a lot more town meetings by covering the recordings of the meetings.
Are these recordings just unedited?
It's just raw recording of the meeting. Mm-hmm. And you can download it or you can listen to it online and scroll through to the minute, and I'm trying to do that with meetings I go to, is write in notes about this happens at minute 25 and this happens at it's much more useful if you're looking for a specific issue.
What's the quality of the streaming?
It depends. You can go to our website and listen for yourself what the recordings I'm making with fairly good condenser mics. If you put a little recorder on the table, it's going to be about as good as the town. Often the towns have old cassette recorders sitting on the table, so they're close to the people on the town board, and when it's public question time, you're not really going to hear the questions if your phone is on the table. But with the directional mics, we also have equipment that we can lend out, so when I go to meetings, I take these and I aim them at the public talking, and then you can really actually hear it.
Sam, you did a survey. Was that last year?
Beginning of this year.
What sort of needs do you find people looking for?
Well, without having it right in front of me, I wouldn't want to characterize it too definitively, but I think people, they crave information. It's probably self-evident. Surely self-evident. Everybody crave information that directly impacts their lives. People, if you ask them about what issues you care about, they care about property taxes, they want to know what to do this weekend. It's real nuts and bolts stuff. I do think that the idea of deputizing kind of the busybodies of each of the, how many towns are there between the two counties, 40, say?
Something like that.
You know, deputizing them, or having a good quality digital recorder for each town, as it were, that can be passed around. You know, I think, you know, few people are going to, the same reason that people don't go to town board meetings is the reason why very few people are going to listen to a two-hour recording of the meeting where they can't see the faces, they can't hear, aren't sure whether anything is going to come up. So that synthesis is essential. But, you know, my mom was the daily reporter at the Eagle back when it was a great family-owned paper, and, you know, the rule there was to get as many local names of every edition as possible, whether it was through Little League scores or honor rolls or, you know, hard news about town board meetings. And, you know, I would certainly love to see, you know, the accountability that covering all of those meetings you know, can bring to local governments. It's pretty tough to do. But, you know, it's just that nuts and bolts stuff. I don't think there's any rocket science to it. It's just, you know, if your grandchild's in the paper or on the radio, you tune in or you read.
Yeah, we're trying to break up our, I mean, we have a little news blog so far, and we're putting recordings up, but and we're designing the website for the community station, but we're breaking it up into, and I think this came from a conversation I had with you in February, everything by the town that's in. So if you live in Durham in Greene County, or you live in Germantown, you're really interested in what's going on in Germantown, and you're not really interested in what's going on in Chatham. So our site is going to be really easy to search for Germantown news, and for Rhinebeck, or for Hudson, or for Valencia, you know. So that's one way we're doing it, and like you were saying, we're looking for the busybody in those places and trying to, I've interacted with a lot of them, and so far what we're doing is fairly theoretical. I think once the FM station is actually on the air, it'll be a lot easier to pull in those busybodies to, if they hear, like, oh, that's the recording I made, it's on the radio today, you know.
I would think, just to cap that off, the training, you know, is essential. I know you've been having some sessions, but, you know, if you can go to a town and show four people, here's how you operate the equipment, here's when you go home, how you get it up to our website, or you do it straight from the phone, and once people master that, then they'll do it. Before then, it's too daunting. You know,
yeah.
They, in theory, think they're going to do it.
Right now, in Cairo is where we're the farthest along. That's just where I'm located. And I'm going to many of the town meetings and recording them, and most of them are up. And we have a really nice digital recorder in the library that people can check out. And but you have to get trained on it. And we've trained, I think, 5 or 10 people on it. And they're starting to check it out and use it. And I think, like I said before, once the FM station is up and on, there'll be a lot more people using it. And so that's the kind of model we're going to try to replicate. We've got a couple more digital recorders. We're going to hopefully have one in the Hudson Library pretty soon, and you know, start getting people over here to use it. But it's going to be a slow process, I think.
Do you think there's a need to, I mean, you know, there are all these stories going on a national level around healthcare right now, but to be able to look into each of the different towns here and find out what rises up out of Valencia and Cairo and Hudson to see if there's anything that reflects those national stories on a local level, so that split between the big national stories and the local stories stops widening and starts to come back together.
That is a very good way to look at it, yeah. We're looking at some grants to for specific issues. Like we're definitely looking at agricultural grants to cover do agricultural reporting in this area, since that's kind of an under, it's a very important topic, and that kind of has national implications, like you're talking about. So Aaron's been looking at lots of funding for lots of different issues. So I don't know what specifically I can say to what you just said, but
What resources would you need from the radio or from that something like this could bring to you?
Well, from a news perspective, it's one thing. From just an overall newspaper perspective, it's another. One of the things that we find is that even being around now for a while, people don't know that we're here, and so that the radio has added the visibility, just like when I'm on AMC or whatever, you know, wherever I am, that's a very, and one of the interesting things that we learned, but it's not relevant to you, but it may be some sort of model that you'll run into that's similar. We have been selling in convenience stores. That's where we started selling. And we thought, well, everybody goes to convenience stores. Well, it turns out everybody buys their gas at convenience stores, but they don't go inside. The transaction is done entirely at the pump.
Right.
So they say, where do I get it? Well, where do you live? Well, I live in Hillsdale. Well, there's this store and this store and this store in Hillsdale. But, oh, well, I go to that store, but I never go inside. And I don't know whether there are things about how you find your way onto people's radio dials.
Well, we're going to hopefully talk to those stations about the radio station they're playing out under the pumps while you're pumping and you're listening to is our station.
Right. But, that awareness factor, which you figure on some levels in a small community that is relatively closely connected, would be self-evident. That's a myth. You have to fight your way into people's consciousness, and you probably found that doing your station even in those relatively remote communities.
Yeah.
You know that you have to go. You know, you have to knock on people's doors. I mean, it's one thing if you've been around a couple hundred years and people know who you are. And there are drawbacks there too, but they know who you are and what you are, and they have a formed opinion whether it's informed or not. And then news, I can't answer your question specifically because I don't know, but I think one of those things is. One of the things that I started to do was to prepare podcasts when The Independent was still around, because I figured for us, one of the large audiences potentially is weekenders, because you have a large second home contingent, and Greene County is the same way. And what I thought was, well, this is a great way to reach them. If people download at their office the podcast and listen to it, then they're likely to, because it's only going to be one story, plus maybe some teasers for other things. Then you're listening to that on the 2.5 hour drive up from the city, and that's particularly helpful for the people on this side of the river, because when you drive through all those dark areas of the, where the trolls live, as my wife says, along the Taconic State Parkway, where there's no reception for radio and no cell phone reception, there's no mobile of any kind, then podcast is a way that you can get entertainment along the way. And the only problem was that the corporation that owned the Independent wasn't able to provide the RSS services or podcasts. They weren't able to handle it. But for me, that's a captive audience. Just and I'm happy to share that with anybody. I mean, I think that's a great place to be, is to say, okay, you determine when you listen to this, because unlike television and unlike commercial radio, it's not important exactly when you listen to it, as long as you listen to it within that certain window. So, and I'm a commercial enterprise, I'm not nonprofit, so that's a different thing. And maybe there'd even be advertising on it, that hadn't even been determined. But I looked at it as a way of making people aware of what it is. So one thing that the station in general can do to support the news is to say, here's a way that we make it easier for you to do that. You know, maybe you have the resources to make it a hell of a lot easier. If you phone it in, or FTP it in, and then you mount it, and it's a cooperative enterprise. You benefit from having it. We send people to your site to download it. Why do I need it on my site? I don't. You know, I'd like to have it there, and I'd sure like to have them see it. But if there's a link from that to my site, what's the difference? You know,
right.
I'm getting that news out there, and if I get the ability to tag it and say, you know, pick up the Independent, in this case, that was what it was then, pick up the Columbia paper now, then I'm satisfied that I've created value for what I'm doing. And it's not exclusive. I mean, you know, it could be done by anybody. That's not the issue. So those kinds of cross-pollinations that aren't specifically about the news, but are about things that are in the news, those kinds of things are really good. And then I think that there's one of the better channels for people coming to our site is through COCO To Do, which is a crowdsourced calendar. Now, that's you know, we don't exploit, any of us, crowdsourcing to the degree that we should. You're really premising a station in a way on crowdsourcing.
Yeah.
And that's, it's anathema to traditional news to do that. But clearly that's a direction that we have to go, and we have to figure out how to manage crowdsourcing, which is, in a sense, an oxymoron. But at the same time, it is part of what we do, is that, you know, you talk about going to all these meetings. Well, that's great, but as all of us who've done it know, that the only people who repeat go there are, as you call them, the busybodies. I call them the people who can only talk at meetings, because the people at home won't listen to them anymore. And often what you get is their long diatribes. They've gone to meetings, and if they don't have a long diatribe to make, they don't go to that meeting. And then something happens there where the tax rate goes up 15%, and they weren't there because they didn't have anything to say about it. And those are difficult, and that's the difference between what people want from a regular news source, putting regular in quotes or however you want to describe it, from traditional media, and don't want to pay for anymore. So we're in that bind. I don't have an answer for that, but I do think that that I'm, just as a publisher and as an editor, open to anything, to give it a try, because it can't get much worse than it is. frankly, it's got to, and even if it doesn't get better, at least we'll have given it a try, because you know, we're losing people all the time, and I've just been dealing with the post office, and it is clear to me when the post office demands that you weigh a weekly newspaper down to 4 digits, 1/10,000th of a pound, in order to set rates and put things in bags, it really is, dealing with the Postal Service is like dealing with a Monty Python skit and living in it, and they're not the bad guys. The Postal Service is being run in terms of bulk distribution by Time Warner and the large companies that set the distribution rates, because they can program their printing presses to set up the stack of the magazines in the order that the news carrier delivers them. And for that, they demand lower prices. That excludes small people, and that means there's less of a chance for subscription distribution. It puts huge barriers in the way, and the only way we're going to get out is through electronic media, frankly, because they don't even want, they don't, in fact, the Postal Service no longer knows how to set up a subscription service for a newspaper. They don't have any collective wisdom left. And I say that not to complain, but to say that's what, it isn't just that the new media are more attractive, it's that the old media model has broken down and only works for the large system, the People magazine publishers.
Or the free mailers.
The free mailers, right.
But we're running into real problems now, having to go out of Kingston instead of out of the local.
Yeah, exactly. So you run into these incredible barriers that say, okay, I don't want to get sidetracked on that issue, but just to say that these experiments, anybody who isn't open to them isn't going to be around very long, because we got to find something to do, and I'm open to anything in terms of looking at the candidate forums. I think that's a great idea. I think that shining a light on towns, even if the towns don't know when you're going to show up, the very fact that you might show up and that you ask questions makes them slightly more honest, or at least more afraid that somebody might pull the rug back and look at what's underneath, because that's what's happening, is that that light is no longer being shown as in uneven and as ineffective as it sometimes was. It was there, and the threat was always there that you could look, and you know, there's one daily, you know, and there's a weekly, a couple of weeklies, and that's it, you know. So welcome to the club, and anything you can do to help do it. I don't think you're going to have a large audience for those meeting recordings, but the fact that they're there is a great service to the community.
Sam, how did you get, I mean, because you all got a lot of visibility. I mean, was it quick, or it took a while, right?
Talking about for the cement plant issue?
Yeah.
But it started very small. I mean, I guess what I take away from that experience as far as what we're talking about today is that I think the way you get on the map is that there needs to be a sense of urgency. I mean,
an example I've discussed with a few other people is the ice storm last winter. It was almost impossible. There was no one-stop shop, one place where you could go either turn on the radio, you know, pick up a paper, turn on the TV, where you could find out what roads were open. You know, when was my road open? When was power anticipated to come on? That's where I think crowdsourcing citizen journalism can do amazing things. If you provide people with a framework and real tools, you know, if I could, you know, go to a map and, you know, put a dot on it when they cut the fallen trees off of Route 27, I would have done it, because it's almost sort of fun. And I think, you know, major events like that, you know, the station might kind of perk along like this. Something big happens, suddenly you're essential, and then you're going to stay up at that plateau.
That's what happened with the radio in New Orleans. So there was WWOZ and a couple other stations that kept broadcasting.
Yeah, and then times could communicate television. Sam's right about the ice storm. We got the news about the closing of the Taconic State Parkway on that, what it was, Friday afternoon, whatever it was. And I got it right up on the web. Now, the people couldn't see the information if they didn't have power. But the people in the city could see it. And our traffic went up like that. Because I was basically doing it hour by hour, or, you know, and there wasn't much. The funny thing was that they weren't giving out the information. And in fact, when we just had a flood, they produced the information on the roads that were closed as a PDF that you couldn't use. You had to use it as an image. So we've been after that. So there's these puzzles that you run into, and you know, you have to say, well, wait a minute, that's not helpful. You know, people can't scroll through that.
And during these kind of emergencies, we'll be taking calls live,
yeah.
And we can do it from you guys too. If you find out information and call in from the Columbia paper, and that'll drive some people to your website. But like the flood a couple weeks ago and the ice storm, those issues, we're gonna be live taking calls, and like we're saying, like there's no need for a traffic reporter in this area. But if you have people call in when there's an accident that's blocking, like the Rip Van Winkle Bridge or something, and you can't get across, that's vital information that can be useful like right away.
And I think it's training the authorities as well. I mean, I think that generally they've been pretty cooperative. I mean, there are certain times that they're secretive and they're hard to deal with. But generally, like the sheriff's office, they've been pretty open. And they will give us information about those kinds of things. They need to be trained. They need to be trained not to give you a PDF of road closings, if you can make it a list that you know you can edit as they're back on, and you know you can do something with it. So it's those small things.
But I like your idea of like some sort of Google Map or something that you can,
yeah,
everybody can click on. That could be a shared document between publications. Like it's on your site, it's on our site, and if during the ice storm you can click on.
Well, here's another example. The television stations run the crawl of the schools that are closed. Do you know how much it costs to join the system? It's about $1,500 just to join, and then there's a yearly fee.
From a school?
No.
Who?
There's a collective of the television stations, and they've set this entry fee.
Oh, I see.
And,
to get that,
and then they go out and they recruit the schools to sign up and go to one. It's this clearinghouse. Now, that's a nice thing for Albany, because that's a relatively big market. But I've always felt that the website is a perfect place to put the school closings in the winter. My God, I mean, and yet there isn't that availability. And I don't blame you for doing it.
You have to make 15 calls.
You'd have to make 15 calls. You have to know who to call, and you'd have to be awake at 4 o'clock in the morning to make that call.
Or you just pull it off the TV.
Well, you can do that, but then basically they're saying, you know, you can cite that source, but you can't link to them. I asked, could I send somebody to channel to the various channels? They say, yeah, sure. And then they call me back and say, no, we can't do that. That's prohibited by our agreement.
It's kind of insane. Like they don't want you to send them web traffic.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's it, because they're saying, well, we buy into this, and then we're hurting our exclusivity if you can just simply have somebody click and come to it. And I understand that on some level, but I also say, wow, that's what's going on. So there are opportunities. We say, well, hey, if you're listening to the station, you know you're only in Columbia and Greene County, basically. There's you know, roughly 12, 14 school districts, that's not an impossible thing, especially in the web if they just have to call, leave a message or something like that. We're closed, we have a delayed opening, 1 hour, 2 hour, whatever. That could be something, especially if there are institutions. Now, it was done by, I think, somebody at St. Rose at the college. So it was an institution was doing it, not even a profit-making institution.
We could easily set up something like that. We already have like a 800 number you can call in and leave a message, and it makes an MP3 of the phone call, and then you just put the MP3 into a rotation.
I think, Paul, just the other part of your question about, you know, how do you get people's attention? I mean, the simple fact of the matter is you have to be relentless. You have to be willing to annoy 10% of the people who say, why do you keep pestering me, in order to get to the 90% of people whose attention is very random. They might pick up the Columbia paper once every couple weeks, then they go away for a while. They might turn on the radio in their car, you know, 1 hour during the day, and miss you. And it's just, you know, my approach was, you know, if you had a piece of news, you put it out in a press release, you know, faxed everybody who had a fax number, an email. If Twitter had existed, we would have done that too. And you don't think, well, I'll just put it on Facebook and I'm done. You have to do that saturation. And again, 1 in 10 people will say, could you stop emailing me? But it's surprising how long it takes to get through to people. I mean, on that issue.
How much for, like, the lawn signs and all that sort of stuff in terms of just getting it awareness?
It's a cumulative effect. You know, you're doing direct mailing, you've got lawn signs out, you've got bumper stickers on people's cars, you've got word of mouth is obviously still the most powerful form of marketing ever, but you kind of have to augment that word of mouth to really push it beyond just, you know, the casual thing. Again, unless you've got some major crisis where everybody's talking about it.
Group of the interested that you put together, would their interests be such as to help create a centralized news source of this sort that could continue?
Talking about in general, will those type of people support this kind of effort? Sure. Again, if it's delivering news that they either already feel they need or come to feel they need because their friends are talking about it or they're but, you know, it has to be whipped up, I hate to say it, but it does to some extent.
It's going to need advertising. I mean, you think about WAMC, for me, in Hillsdale, my choices are WAMC, WAMC, okay? And I commute every day to Pittsfield and back, and I used to commute to Williamstown. I don't have, the only other station is the one in Great Barrington that I can get. 860, whatever that is, that a box station or whatever. So
WBCR is about to get their full power license in Great Barrington too, so you'll have
one. So that, but we don't have one in Columbia or Green. Okay, so here I'm an ideal person because if I did have a Columbia or Green radio station and knew about it, I would, unless it was terrible, I would want to listen in, if nothing more than the weather. Okay, but how do you get to me? Okay. I'm busy, and I'm listening to another radio station while you're trying to get to me, and here I am wanting to listen. So that's the effort, and you know you're not going to get to me. Well, you might if in a bumper sticker, but I doubt it. So either you're going to have to pay for advertising or on radio in stations like WAMC, or get a grandfather. You know, a not-for-profit grandfather that's going to, on the radio, that's going to be able to leverage you and do that. And I know you're not going to go to WAMC, but there would be an example, okay, where if it was an organization like that that's already on the radio, then they could say, hey, and tune in to Columbia Green's new, you see what I'm saying? That's the most efficient way that you're going to get it.
How did you find out about us?
Actually, I found about it, Perry's right, it was with the internet station that you just mentioned, Coco, whatever.
Coco Jeanette,
yeah. Right, that came through to my wife, okay, through there, and then she emailed me that, okay, that's how I found out about it.
Yeah, we're linked directly, it's one of those great things. We look at our web traffic,
there's a large percentage of it that comes through there. And then part of that is because when you go to that site, and it's been around for a while, they put our headlines on it, which is fantastic for us, and they've been just great. You know, it's a different thing. They have a calendar, we have a calendar. I don't see any competition.
Now, we're actually I've talked to Christy a little bit about having there's going to be a calendar on the WGXC website when it's ready, and having it import and export so that people who, you know, the crowd that puts up calendar items on our calendar and are going to be different than putting them up on Kogo Today, but the events will appear on both sites. And, you know, we're totally open to sharing that. That calendar is the calendar that's going to be read by DJs of, like, this is what's going on tonight. So we're trying to partner with as many kind of calendars that are already existing to try to make them all more robust and have everything on it by allowing events to be imported and exported to each other's calendars.
Another way you could, I'm thinking cheap, and go to each one of the newspapers as a not-for-profit and ask to see if they would give you some free ad space, you know, based on, you know, on this, okay? And on the concept, too. I don't know how the newspaper's going to react to that, but, I mean, it's worth a try.
Well, one thing KBUT did is we had underwriting trades with a lot of other media establishments. So, I mean, we ran ads in the newspaper for lots of different events that we were doing, but we traded that for underwriting when we went on air.
Right. It's always a trade,
It's always a trade.
And that works. That's not.
Andrew, do you have any sense of what the Register Star, the Daily Mail, feels about this possible collaboration or working together? I mean, you guys are the big elephant in the room, but as the daily newspaper.
It's a rough spot.
There's been discussion. So.
That's what I've heard too. Like maybe they're sending somebody to the 6 o'clock meeting, or Jim Plank said he was coming, but not he was coming on his own, and they were bringing somebody else like that. Perhaps you don't know.
But I came to this, you know, on my own, not representing.
Do you guys? Is there other people that feel uncomfortable of working with the? The big newspaper chain, in the area. I guess that's most apparent.
Well, I mean, we're competitors, but the issue I think in the newspaper world is you better hope for more newspapers, not fewer. There's no Schadenfreude that anybody has the misfortunes of newspapers. That's not a viable approach either. You want newspapers to be successful. All newspapers do some forms of trade, I believe, but they want something of value for it. And if you can say, I have an audience of such and such, and you know, I'm going to mention your name on the radio, not as an advertisement, but as an underwriter, then there's every reason to expect that there's a quid pro quo for that. That's completely above board. That's listed so that you say that's a donation made, and they say this is a this is the value of that, and it's all reported and it's out front. So that's a legitimate and time tested and regulatorily tested approach, and shouldn't be overlooked. I think it's a good one. And I think the fact that one newspaper is underwriting one thing and another newspaper is underwriting either another day of the same thing or a different thing shouldn't be of issue, but that's dependent on the individual newspaper. I don't have a problem with it, but it's easy for me to say because I'm the new kid on the block. And I'm not the established daily, which is a different, they have different priorities. And Andrew can't say this, but again, they are owned by a corporation that has policies. And that has to be factored in ways that I have no concept of what is, and I certainly don't speak for the daily. But those are, you know, those are parts of the puzzle that you have to address.
That was one of the things with KBUT that was so easy for us. Both some of the papers were independent. We didn't have to go through this pyramid of...
Well, you're not going very far. I don't want to mischaracterize it because you're only going to Watertown. But it's still... But you're right. But it's still... There are levels of,
of bureaucracy in any larger organization.
Didn't you run into, I mean, remember when the program of the 90s, and there was that whole effort to try to organize public access stations around the country, and it seemed like a great idea, but it just...
Well, that the DD and Nancy know about that. I don't.
Okay,
I wasn't directly involved. I was already in print by then.
I would really, you know, recognizing that you have, you know, the cranks and the single issue people out there, but I wouldn't give up on the idea of finding some really terrific citizen journalists out there. There's no town in this area that I've spent any significant amount of time in where there isn't somebody who's producing already, you know, a detailed, you know, quite comprehensive and surprisingly objective and usually very lively report for their circle of people about what's going on in the town. Ellen Thurston is now, doesn't do it anymore because she's an alderman, but for probably about 7 years, wrote up an incredibly, really a hilarious, but also an extremely informative account of not just the council meetings in Hudson, but you know, DPW meetings and everything else. And it was remarkable. And as soon as I moved to Taconic, I found out that there was somebody there who was doing virtually the same thing. And again, if they feel like they have, and those are just, you know, absolutely on their own. If you felt like you have some backing from an institution like a radio station, and someone who could say, here's how you set up a blog, here's how you can upload, you know, your report to our site, or we want you as a guest, I think it would encourage much more. You know, you're going to encounter some problematic characters, I'm sure, in that search, but it's surprising, I mean, how intensely people feel about their towns, you know, unless there's just really nothing going on.
Can you start sharing some of those names with people? That,
yeah, I mean, some of my contacts are a little out of date, but...
And usually if you find one, it can lead to others.
Well, the perfect example right now is Bob Sachs in the Cocaine Chronicle. And Sam's right. I that's a good point, Sam, because I didn't want to make it seem like you could only find cranks and only find the people who want to monopolize meetings. There are lots of good people out there, and the surprising density of them here in Columbia County.
Columbia County, I think there's more than Greene County from
well,
my...
Well, I'm finding another thing that I'm starting to do, because I've got people covering things and stuff, is the use of the actual agenda from a meeting to go back and check with both those who are at the meeting covering it and those running the meeting to say, okay, well, what happened to this item? What happened to this item? And keeping a running track of those agendas, because they often get lost in the shuffle of a live meeting. And there are lots of items that come up and disappear or get passed without any discussion that you wouldn't normally cover.
That's a good idea. No, I hadn't thought of that. I could actually take photo of the agenda at the meeting and immediately send that out to the website.
You know, they'll have it. They'll have it in an actual, each town or a supervisor's clerk will have it in a Word file, usually. And they usually post it, too. It's often...
yeah, not in Cairo.
It's not on their
website is hard.
It's sometimes harder to get your hands on than you'd think.
Yeah. Oh my God.
I mean, basically, like Taconic, the town hall has no public office hours whatsoever.
Yes.
It's all out of the clerk's hands.
Do they have a website of any sort?
You know, sort of a vintage, like 2001, very flat website. Once in a while, gets updated. It may be a little bit better.
Here's the other: how to get, you know, the all our local papers have a real problem, I think, making a connection between what's going on in Albany and what's going on in Washington and in our local towns. It's Have you found any way around that?
I have a story on cash for clunkers this time. The mix is local and national.
Are you getting much out of Murphy's office?
People are saying we've got to stop putting Scott Murphy on the front of the paper. But you know, he talked about healthcare at one of those town meetings, and the people were there ready to shout him down. He did a very effective job, I think, of diffusing that and letting them talk, which is really what they wanted. And so that was an interesting take on that whole thing, the national, and all you had to do was reference it, because everyone knew what was going on with other Congress members, and here was a guy who didn't end up having to do that. So that, you know, that was the story. I mean, he actually managed to diffuse that. I don't know, I haven't found that national local connection difficult when there's some real story. You've got to find the real aspect of it. That's always the challenge.
Yeah, Murphy called me back on the credit card story that I was running. We talked about it. Great.
Yeah. And he actually knows that issue too.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
I guess there are some that aren't as. Yeah, I've been trying to track down Cahill, say, on the energy price problem that occurred last winter when all these people were locked in the story, and Cahill had just become head of the energy department. And there was a lot of dissatisfaction. On the one hand, there was statements coming out of the energy companies, and then nothing coming out of all of them or anywhere else.
I'm shocked.
I was wondering if there was any way of building up a local presence
as one editor to another. I wouldn't conflate Washington and Albany.
Yeah,
it's just entirely different.
I mean, I do think in addition to the day-to-day stuff that keeps, fills the airwaves and keeps people interested, there's an opportunity for radio to do news analysis, whether it's by having guests on, may not have the resources to do investigative reporting, but, when an issue comes onto the radar, like when the Times did that amazing series, I think it was now a couple of years ago, about the town justices, that was a staggering piece of investigative work. None of us are going to be able to fund that kind of investigative work, but it's an opportunity to say, hey, let's find the local angle here. And of course, it turned out in Stockport, you had a judge who was alleged to have been dipping into his funds, and could have been an example right out of that story. Sure. Finding ways to look at the bigger picture, whether it's between among towns or in relation to Albany or relation to an issue like cash for clunkers, go to Kinder and Toyota and find out, are you selling more cars or less cars, or just selling to people who were going to buy a car anyway? Or
you'll have to read our story.
Okay, I haven't been on the website.
Incredible website that's gained popularity for radio in the last, year. It's called Spot. I put a link to it here.
Mm-hmm.
It's a way, spot.us, I think is what it is. And it's kind of like an eBay for investigative reporting. You post an idea for a story that you want and that you would like to report on in your city, and then people and you say how much money it's going to cost for you to be able to do that story. It's going to cost $900 for us to do an investigative report on this town. And if people want to hear the story, they go and they donate however much money they want, $5, $100, and unless you make all the money for the story, people get their money back. There's a certain amount of time, 2 weeks. If you don't fund the story, people didn't really.
Is there an element in that where you can find out about just similar investigations going on elsewhere around the country?
I don't think so. I mean, you can
see that's what would eventually be very valuable, is to be able to grassroots search a story, to find the connections between the story in different smaller towns or different sized towns or counties or demographics.
There's a search engine within the program where you could probably do some of the same, but it's only the search engine's only going to find other people that are posting their stories. you have to do a lot of different research. I just think it's an interesting way to fund investigative stories that might not otherwise be funded. Anybody else?
Yeah, there's, I mean, I have a friend of mine who was actually trying to start a new company based around that idea. He abandoned it, though, because he wasn't, the funding wasn't there or something, or his business model wasn't great. But but it was actually, his was more global focused. But the idea of, you know, just having direct listener-supported stories is a pretty amazing new development. And there are all these other things too, like Hyperlocal, right, this new app that's being developed, which is...
I think the New York Times is doing it, or somebody like that is
yeah, it's
basically trying to wipe us all out.
Basically, yeah. And it's actually pretty crappy, on the record. It's not a very user-friendly app, but, you know, I check in periodically with it, and...
I think the sports one is ahead of the news one.
Yeah. So, you know, those are obviously... threats to some extent, but they're also maybe sources of inspiration in others. Because, I mean, what something like Hyperlocal can't do is exactly what local radio can do, which is to be. I mean, that's a very passive form, right? Hyperlocal blogging and local news, but radio is much more active. So I don't think that that's as much of an issue, maybe, but. But it's still something where they're developing the apps that can kind of link people together in ways like the the meta calendar, or you know, keeping track of what's going on across certain local areas, where you can actually have a sense of what other people are working on if they're along the same lines. It adds to another. That's the idea of trying to pool resources, or to kind of maybe make one local story into a regional story that would, you know, pull in 5 times as many listeners because it's of great interest. But you know, there are a lot of kind of technological innovations that are happening now that could maybe help. I mean, certainly within the next year of planning, or the phases of development, that can help shape the way that your site will run. Yes.
Do all of the, forgive my ignorance, but do most of the colleges within, say, the likely listening area have journalism or communications programs, or most people who are likely to become journalists, English majors, or
colleges in our listening areas are you guys in Columbia Green Community College.
Yeah, I don't, Columbia Green, do they have...
They have a radio program. They have a studio set up that we're going to plug into and have students do programming from that studio.
Cool.
I don't know. I don't
Marist
really think
does.
They have much of a journalism program.
No, Marist does too, but they're outside of our listenership. But they have a more evolved kind of media broadcasting communications program. And,
big
yeah, and... Bard, of course, has none of those things, but there's no interest in that at Bard to some extent, but hopefully that's another reason why our focus is going to be slightly different, though, because...
We're also talking a little bit about partnering with... There's about 5 regional radio stations starting besides ours and Bard's.
Yeah.
I mentioned Great Barrington, the low-power station there, WDCR, is very, very, very likely going to be upgraded to full power, and... will be heard in somewhat in Columbia County. Roxbury to the west of Greene County got a construction permit, and they're starting their station fairly soon. We've talked a little to WJFF in Jeffersonville to the south. It's a real cool hydro-powered community station down there. So we're having a little discussion about maybe some regional news coverage for, like, really Hudson Valley bigger stories. And that might be, like, pulling resources and getting a reporter to do some longer investigative stories, or just sharing when we each have individually have state stories that are interesting to the other areas. So it seems like... we're about at a wrapping up point. Does anybody have anything left to questions left, Aaron could definitely put you in touch with the publishers in Colorado if you want to ask them specific questions. And
yeah, I included their contact information on there.
I think, Andrew, for your bosses, that's probably the best way to go. Like, if I don't see them later today at the other meeting, I'm going to call. It's Teresa and Ray is the managing editor in Catskill, and I don't remember who the...
Teresa
is the person over here, so I'll give them a call and hook them up with the Colorado publishers, and that's probably, they can answer their questions a lot better than I can. About how a partnership might work. But thank you guys for coming. We're definitely very interested in you being a part of the
Just me, the Lone Ranger.
How are you?
Yeah, no,
how
are you?
I've actually been exploring your neck of the woods a lot more recently.
Yeah,